This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Super friends, my name is Sonia Simone, and these are the confessions of a pink-haired marketer. For those who don't know me yet, I am a co-founder and the chief content officer for Rainmaker Digital. I'm also a champion of running your business and your life according to your own rules. As long as you don't lie and you don't hurt people, this podcast is your official pink permission slip to run your business or your career exactly the way you think you should. So I've been reading a fun book. It's called How Artists Work, Daily Rituals, and it's written by Mason Curry. And something that really strikes you when you read this is that different artists, writers, painters, scientists, they all have different rituals, but almost all of them do have some kind of creative ritual, some kind of specific set of habits they go through to get work done. And you'll find people have all kinds of advice to give. You have to get up early, or you have to work late, or you must never work weekends, or you must work weekends. But there's always someone who's incredibly successful and influential who has done none of those things. So you need to figure out your own ritual pattern that supports your work. And you may need to tweak it to get it exactly right. So for example, Nabokov wrote his drafts in pencil on index cards, and when he was on a road trip across the United States, he wrote the first draft for Lolita at night in the backseat of his parked car. So a good ritual is one that can be adapted to the circumstances you find yourself in. You know, not being able to do your hyper-specific ritual is a terribly lousy reason for not working. So I kind of went through the book. I had so many different stories that struck me that I captured the names of 12 really influential creative people. Some of them give great examples for things you can learn from creative rituals, and some of them give counterexamples of, you know, doing things the hard way. And I thought that I would share them with you and see if any of these might be interesting for you to try in your own work. So the first one that struck me, and actually I think that this is in some ways counter to the example of a lot of working artists today, is that the people in this book, they really were not precious about their work. They didn't sort of sit around thinking about how talented and creative they were. They just got to work. And the poster child for this, and many writers know this example, is a novelist named Anthony Trollope. He worked in the 19th century. He worked at the post office for 33 years, and over that time, he published 24 books. And this is what he had to say about daily production. All those, I think, who have lived as literary men, working daily as literary laborers, will agree with me that 3 hours a day will produce as much as a man ought to write. By then, he should have so trained himself that he shall be able to work continuously during those 3 hours. So have tutored his mind that it shall not be necessary for him to sit nibbling his pen and gazing at the wall before him. So Trollope was sort of a freak of nature. He was so regular in his habits that if he finished one of his gigantic novels in the middle of the work period that he set out, he worked for 3 hours every morning. If he finished a book in the middle of a work period, he would get out some fresh paper, blot the ink on the finished page, and start the next book. So that's sort of insane. He is legendary for this. This is not the behavior of a normal person. But I think there's something there about not fetishizing your work, you know, not making it into some epic project of great thinking. So whether it's writing or business or putting a sales letter together or recording a podcast, it's just work. You just show up and you do it, and you don't necessarily get ultra tied up in what it all means. Now, I'm fine thinking about what your work means, but don't do it during your production time. Producing time is really just time to buckle down and not get too precious about it. There's a counterexample in fiction writer Donald Bartlemy. And Bartlemy would take the entire sheet out of the typewriter and throw it away if he wrote a sentence that he wasn't happy with. And for you youngsters, a typewriter is a kind of a noisy laptop that can only do word processing. At the end of the day, you know, Bartlemy would have a couple of pages, or he might have a sentence, or he might have nothing. Now, you certainly can create great work this way, and in fact, Bartlemy was just a terrific writer. But you will also discover why some creative people drink. And I'm not saying don't edit, because that would be crazy, but separate out the draft and the edit. And during the draft time, don't get precious about it. Let it be crummy. Let it be awkward. Let it be pedestrian. Just sit down, do the work, and then you can always refine it later. So that leads into the second habit. The first being, you know, don't be so precious about your work. And the second habit being to define your work cycles to produce more work with less pain. So Gustave Flaubert and Ayn Rand both had, they both shared a work process, which is that they started their work and they just bashed away at it until it was finished. Perhaps incidentally, both of them had drug problems. Most of the influential creatives that are mentioned in Curry's book worked in cycles. So some of them had one work period for a day. So for example, Trollope was an example of that. He worked for 3 hours in the morning and then he was done. Some of them have two, a couple of them have three. So it might be between breakfast and lunch. And that's the most common example in the book. But of course, that has to be, you know, worked around whatever your day job or other obligations might be. But there was a work cycle, and then that would be followed with a break. It would be followed with a walk, and I'll talk more about walking in a minute. A lot of times some socializing. Then they would go into another work period, another cycle, you know, let's say between lunch and dinner, and then some had an additional work cycle late at night. So any kind of creative work, which is most of the important work that we do, especially, you know, 21st century, the work that can't be done by a robot, the work that can't be done by an ultra low wage offshore freelancer, that type of work is draining, and you must allow for time to refill the well. And making space for refilling the well is part of what the creative ritual does for you. So as I mentioned a minute ago, walks are magic. That was kind of the third learning or the third habit from this. Tchaikovsky and Freud were both great believers in walks, and they walked for hours and hours every day. But it's really striking how many of these creative geniuses, including walking, in their daily ritual. So some of them walked for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours a day, some of them for half an hour. You know, I am not a legendary genius or anything like it, but I use walks in my daily habits because they clear your mind and they let your brain come up with a fresh perspective. John Medina wrote a really interesting book called Brain Rules, and he made a pretty strong case in that book that your brain has evolved to think better when you are walking. And of course, you know, some people run or some people swim. Oliver Sacks is a swimmer. So you know what works for you. But some kind of rhythmic physical activity can be tremendously useful in recharging yourself creatively. And of course, you know, helping to maintain your physical health while you're doing creative work. And one somewhat of an adaptation, a 21st century adaptation that I recommend, you know, most of us know our culture, we sit too much and we sit in front of computer screens too much. And it is a big issue for us. So one of the things that I do to counter those effects is I take numerous smaller walks spaced throughout the day. And I found that a social pedometer like a Fitbit can really help make this ritual a regular one. So take short walks, take long walks, take lots of little walks or a couple of big walks, but make walking a habit or some form of a physical activity to get your brain out of the usual rut and to get your body moving. Habit number four, create boundaries that allow for solitude. So a very tiny minority of artists, Charles Dickens was one of them, interestingly, can work well when they're around other people. Nearly all of the people in this book created well-defined boundaries around their space and their time so that they could do creative, solitary work. The French mystery writer Jacques Simenon literally had a do not disturb sign that he would hang up. Now, he also worked in periodic bursts rather than every day. So he would take weeks or months off, and then he would write in intense bursts of activity. So that might be why he needed the sign. He wrote 425 books, so he seems to have figured something out. And something that I have really noticed and, you know, taken exception to is in the office spaces that we work in, if we're in an organization, the private office is almost dead. There's no acoustic privacy at all. There's no visual privacy. You know, we went from having cubicles, which are terrible for productivity, to having half-walled cubicles, which are even worse. This is not a space where people can do their best creative work. It just isn't. And I think that companies like mine have a real advantage. We're a completely virtual organization. So we can offer our employees the solitude that accompanies strong and original creative production. And you've probably noticed in your own life that solitude is relative. So a coffee shop can give you solitude if you don't know anyone there. And in fact, I rotate around my coffee shops because you start to get to know the folks behind the counter, and then it becomes a social period. When I go to a coffee shop to work, I want to be around people without being around people, if you know what I mean. Creative work needs focus, and focus means you have to find a place and a time where the people that you know and like are not going to disturb you. You know, ideally someplace that doesn't smell bad or have irritating noises, somewhere you can think. So a lot of us are doing creative work in a more traditional 21st century office. It's just reality. One thing I would recommend you try is, you know, try working with headphones. Even if there's nothing going through the headphones, they are a signal to other people to leave you alone. And sometimes that helps. But I also, when I was in that situation, I would look for hidden corners of the building, places where I could hide and get some real work done. There's always some corner, you know, of the space where, you know, that doesn't get a lot of traffic, doesn't get a lot of activity. And it is always worth the effort to try to convince the person you're working for to let you do your deepest focus work from home. At least try it out. It takes a little getting used to, but that privacy and that ability to focus can be tremendously beneficial once you get the habits in place to go ahead and knuckle down and get to work. It's one really nice benefit of working for yourself. At least it is for me. The fifth ritual or truism about rituals that I thought was really interesting came from the choreographer Twyla Tharp. So she actually wrote a book about this. She's known for a very intense work ethic and for her extended creative rituals. So she gets up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning. She puts on very specific clothes. She hails a cab because she lives in Manhattan, and then she goes to the gym for 2 hours. And that ritual extends out into the rest of her day, and it ends up with this tremendous amount of creative work and physical effort as a dancer and a choreographer. But I thought this was fascinating, what she had to say about her ritual. The ritual is not the stretching and weight training I put my body through each morning at the gym. The ritual is the cab. The moment I tell the driver where to go, I have completed the ritual. In my experience, that is exactly how rituals work, and it's how I would advise you to create your own. So you can, you know, you can always come up with a process that's got 20 or 30 steps and it's very specific and you need to be in this time and this place. And over time, that might be exactly the way you organize your workday. But I wouldn't start there because you'll never sustain it. Start with the one step. Start with a small, easy habit that you can build so that you do it absolutely every day. And once the habit ball is rolling, it's much easier to build momentum by adding steps or by extending the time. But your ritual is the cab. It's that one, you know, unmistakable but perhaps quite small signal that starts the process. So Curry closes his book with a very fitting quote from the writer Bernard Malamud about the specifics of the creative ritual. There's no one way. There's too much drivel about this subject. You're who you are, not Fitzgerald or Thomas Wolfe. You write by sitting down and writing. There's no particular time or place. You suit yourself, your nature. how one works, assuming he's disciplined, doesn't matter. If he or she is not disciplined, no sympathetic magic will help. The trick is to make time, not steal it, and produce the fiction. Eventually, everyone learns his or her own best way. The real mystery to crack is you. I thought that was wonderful. I thought that was, you know, very much in keeping with what I try to make the theme of this blog about, which is honoring yourself, honoring your own nature, your own strengths, your own weaknesses, your own circumstances, and adapting yourself to fit. But I absolutely do recommend that you try out some simple rituals for getting your brain to get started with creative production of some kind. You know, it could be writing for your blog, it could be podcasting, it could be something with your work or something as a hobby. But it's the most gratifying thing you can do with your time. It's a way that you really have a chance to leave a legacy and touch other people. And it's just so rewarding. So if you have any rituals, I would love it if you would share them with us. If you head on over to pinkhairedmarketer.fm, you can drop me a line and let me know what you think. Let me know, you know, how things are going for you, what kind of rituals you have, maybe what's worked and what hasn't. I just always love hearing about how other people work. It's a funny thing about creative people, and I think Malamud touched on that with his slightly frustrated quote. We're all fascinated with how one another gets the work done. So that's it today. A few thoughts on creative rituals, a few thoughts on creating your own. Would love to hear what you have to say about it. Thank you. Big, big, warm thank you to the many, many of you who have left star reviews on iTunes or, you know, ratings or written reviews. Those are so helpful, and I just sincerely thank every one of you. That's it for today. Take care and see you next time.